Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. Prescribed Duties for Mankind. Chapter 2, Ajamil Delivered by the Vishnu Dutas, text number 5 and 6. Yasyam keshim adhaya lokasvapittinirvritaha svayam dharmam adharmam va nahi vedayata pashuhu Sakatam yarpitamanam. It's not there? Oh, okay. All right, we'll just chant this two verses here. Turn your phone up. Hey, wait a minute. We haven't. Relax. There's two verses. I was going on to the sixth verse, but it's not written up here. So we'll just stick to text number 5, okay? Yasyanke siradhaya lokasva pitinirvritaha svayam dharmam adharmam va nahi veda yata pashuhu Yasyanke shiradadhaya Lokasva pitinibhitaha Svayam dharmam adharmamba Nahi veda yata pashuhu Yasyanke Sorry. Yasya. Of whom? Anke. On the lap. Shira. The head. Adhaya. Placing. Lokaha. The general mass of people. Svapiti. Sleep. Nirbhitaha. In peace. Svayam. Personally, dharmam, religious principles, or the goal of life, adharmam, irreligious principles, va, or na, not he, indeed, veda, no, yata, exactly like. Pashuhu, an animal, saha, such a person, katam, how, nyarpita atmanam, unto the living entity, who has fully surrendered, krita maitram, endowed with good faith, and friendship. Achetanam, with undeveloped consciousness. Foolish. Vishrambaniyaha. Deserving to be the object of faith. Bhutanam. Of the living entities. Sagrinaha. Who has a soft heart. For the good of all. For the good of all people. Dogdam. To give pain. Ahasi. Is able. People in general are not very advanced in knowledge. By which to discriminate between religion and irreligion. The innocent, unenlightened citizen is like an ignorant animal sleeping in peace with its head on the lap of its master, faithfully believing in the master's protection. If a leader is actually kind-hearted and deserves to be the object of a living entity's faith, how can he punish or kill a foolish person who has fully surrendered in good faith and friendship? Purport. The Sanskrit word visvastakata refers to one who breaks faith or causes a breach of trust. The mass of people should always feel security because of the government's protection. Therefore, how regrettable it is for the government itself to cause a breach of trust and put the citizens in difficulty for political reasons. We actually saw during the partition days in India that although Hindus and Muslims were living together peacefully, manipulation by politicians suddenly aroused feelings of hatred between them, and thus the Hindus and Muslims killed one another over politics. This is a sign of Kali Yuga. In this age, animals are kept nicely sheltered, completely confident that their masters will protect them. But unfortunately, as soon as the animals are fat, they are immediately sent for slaughter. Such cruelty is condemned by Vaishnavas, like the Vishnu Dutas. Indeed, the hellish conditions already described await the sinful men responsible for such suffering. One who betrays the confidence of a living entity, who takes shelter of him in good faith, whether that living entity be a human being or an animal, is extremely sinful. Because such betrayals now go unpunished by the government, all of human society is terribly contaminated. The people of this age are therefore described as Manda, Sumanda, Matayo, Mandabhagya, Hi Upatutaha. As a consequence of such sinfulness, men are condemned, Mandaha. Their intelligence is unclear, Sumanda Matayo. They are unfortunate, Mandabhagya. And therefore they are always disturbed by many problems, upadruttaha. This is their situation in this life, and after death, they are punished in hellish conditions. Om Agyana. Timirandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakchurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayati Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam.
Mm.
So, Prabhupada refers to here Visvastagata, one who breaks faith or causes a breach of trust. Not mentioned in the verse though. Prabhupada must be referring to another must be another reference, I guess. But this again underlines or illustrates the responsibilities of the leaders of society, the Kshatriyas, ideally. Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas and the Vaishyas and the Sudras too. They're all, everybody has a leadership role. And that leadership role is demonstrated in each section of society obeying the laws of Dharma. Right. The laws of Dharma, religiosity. And for each section of society, there are certain prescriptions described in the Bhagavad Gita. The actions of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, right? The different limbs of the social body. And just as each of the limbs of our body serves the purpose of the whole body, so similarly the Kshatriyas who are likened to the arms of the body to protect, they're supposed to protect the citizens of society, which, as we were discussing the other day, includes all living entities, includes even the animals. They have a right to live, they have a right to be, or they have an expectation, just everybody has an expectation to be protected. And Prabhupada mentions here, the mass of people should always feel security because of the government's protection. Should always feel security, feel secure. You know, it's why we have a police force. It's why we have rules of the road. Social contracts. So that people will feel safe. So when leadership betrays the citizens, right? Breach of trust, breaks the faith, Visvastagata. Can somebody, I'm going to try and look that up. Let's have a look. There you go. I just wonder where Prabhupada's quoting that from. Mm. Here we go. How do we spell it? This Vista. Let's just look up that word. We'll look up one word, see what we get. Visvasta. Here we go. No, that's it. That's the only reference. Visvastakata. Okay, well, yeah. Not in a word for words. Translate. I have to look it up in the Sanskrit dictionary. So this is, you know, the breach of faith, the loss of faith, the breach of trust. And the example of that is the slaughterhouses. The animals are being fed by the farmers. They're being provided shelter. And so the animals have trust that they'll be protected. Huh? But then they're rounded up, stuck on a truck and sent to the sale yards, usually first, and then who? Off to the butcher. So this is a huge shock for them. Huh? And the animals are crying, you know, when they go to these places and they realize what is happening. They're crying. And they don't like it. So they're suffering. They're having this suffering inflicted upon them. And so there are consequences for that. You know, these are basic laws of karma. Simply understood. As you sow, so you shall reap, right? So if you're inflicting suffering on others, then you can expect a reaction. Right? This is pretty simple. So if you're killing animals, you also can expect to have your situation similarly disturbed. Right? I remember seeing the horses. They used to bring up police horses to the... I used to work in the Adelaide Zoo. Was it this? It was the Adelaide Zoo that I got some affinity for the animals. Well, some of the animals, not all animals. Is it easy to develop a relationship with? You know, the crocodile, especially. Hard to develop some affinity for the crocodile because he would just lie there throughout most of winter, you know, just do nothing. But you could see he had his eyes open. And you always got the feeling that he was looking at you as if you were a meal. But, you know, they have lions, they have the big cats, lions, tigers, panthers, big animals, and they eat their meat eaters, right? So in order to look after and often they would receive animals that had expired, that were deceased, but they... Every now and again they would bring in the alive, and that they would then slaughter them, and it was horrible. The animals were petrified. And of course, some of the keepers got pleasure actually out of killing the animals. They said, "It was horrible." So anyway, I was 19 at the time, around about 18, 19, and I'd already decided I was going to be a vegetarian. But that pretty much, I could see the suffering of the animals, even the caged animals. They didn't like being kept in a cage, right? You could see it, especially the primates, the monkeys and the chimpanzees in particular. They suffered. You could see in their face and in their behaviour. And in all of that, you could see the personality. You know, there was a person there, right? Spirit, soul, effectively. So, you know, it's our responsibility to look after everything, everyone. That's the mood of compassion. It's a mood of a Vaishnava. Why the Vaishnavas are offered respects? Because they're concerned about the welfare of everybody. Vancha kalpa turubhyas cha kripa sindubhya eva cha. They're like an ocean of mercy. Patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. They're compassionate and thoughtful and concerned about the welfare of everybody. Concerned about the sometimes at the expense of their own well-being. They're concerned first and foremost about others and don't mind. Actually get pleasure and satisfaction from working for the benefit of others, even if there's some minor inconvenience for themselves. But they'll accept minor inconvenience to assist others. This is the soft-heartedness of a devotee. So that's why we patitanam pavanebhyo. They're merciful to the fallen. Huh? Merciful to the fallen. No, to everybody, actually. Even those who are not fallen, they're merciful. And they're able to distinguish between dharma and adharma, first and foremost. Huh? Nana shastra vichara naika nipuno sadharma samstapako. So they teach. They teach these principles of dharma and adharma. Also, this is the yajan, yajan, patan, patan. The duty of a brahmana is to study the shastra, perform sacrifice, engage others in sacrifice. Study the Vedas and teach. So study dharma. We see this in the description of the Goswamis, the Shad Goswami Astakam. Nana shastra vichara naika nipuno sad dharma samstapako. They studied the shastra. And the purpose of studying the shastra is to establish religious principles in society. So the people know how to behave. If you don't know how to behave, you behave improperly, you perform vikarma, vikarmic activities, and we see that like the slaughterhouses. This is considered to be very inauspicious, vikarma. And for those who are engaged in these actions, they have to expect the reactions. And so, as Prabhupada points out here, in modern society, everybody is upadrutaha, always disturbed, right? Manda, slow. Sumanda. How does he translate that? Sumanda. Unfortunate. Manda means lacking intelligence. Sumanda matayo, they are unfortunate. Manda bhagya, always. Oh no, sorry. Manda bhagya means unfortunate. Yep. And upadrutaha, always disturbed by many problems. So they're suffering in this life, and then of course in the next life have to take birth in a lower species to suffer. Which is what, you know, why sometimes we're not directly preaching to people, you know, serve Krishna. We're just encouraging them, you know, stop eating meat. It'll affect the consciousness of society, the more people that stop these base and gross attacks on the innocent, effectively. That's what it is. And this cause of distress and shock and despair in the hearts of those living entities, that harassment, basically. So the devotees teach basically dharma and adharma to encourage the citizens to engage in activities that will be for their benefit in this lifetime and even in future lifetimes. Because much of the activities, many of the activities that are being performed in society today, people are just unknowing, just like here, the animals are described. What is it? Shira adhaya lokaha svapitti nirvritaha. And svayam dharmam adharmam va nahi veda yata pashuhu. They're unaware, like an animal sleeping in the lap of its master. And he wakes up, discovers that his throat's been cut. What's going on? Right? So just like those animals, the humans are like that too. Whereas the human form of life is meant to understand these principles. Dharma and ardharma are meant to be understood. And we even see that. Prabhupada talks about Vedic culture. You see it in the remnants of Vedic culture. We see it in India, where people know these principles, right? They know it. Inherently they learn it from birth. They learn these principles. So they even, when they're talking about food, and they know there's a difference between one type of food in the mode of ignorance, even food in the mode of passion, and food in the mode of goodness. But people are always asking, you know, why can't you eat eggs? Well, why can't you eat mushrooms? Huh? Why don't you eat onions and garlic? It's vegetarian, right? egg is not fertilized, so what's the problem? These are very common questions that you get all of the time. Why can't we do these things, right? But it's not difficult to explain to people. At least my experience is, you tell them some foods are in the mode of goodness, that elevates health, awareness, awareness of our conscious identity. Rajasic or rajas, passionate food, forces us to act in ways that are basically being pushed by desires for sense gratification, and tama or ignorance is just makes you dull. Dull. Deadhead. And that's already what people are. Right? Manda, sumanda, matayo, they're dull. Dullards. Especially when it comes to dharma and adharma. And in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, all of this is very simply explained in the Bhagavad Gita when you think about it. Why can't I drink alcohol? Well, look what it does to you. Just look what it does to you. You become more of a dope. Why can't I take drugs? Well, they don't call it dope for nothing. Because look at how you're behaving. And these are simple things to explain to people. This is the duty of a brahmana, or the duty of a devotee, is to explain to people the principles of dharma and ardharma. It's not very difficult, actually. It's fairly simple. Most people will accept these ideas, but they're not really ideas. They're facts. They're principles. That's why a devotee is merciful and is liked by everybody ultimately, because they know that the devotee's engagements are for their benefit, even if they don't like it. Right? Prabhupada says, Chanakya, Prabhupada quotes Chanakya, and he says, if you give a fool good advice, what does he do? Becomes angry. Huh? Give a fool good advice, becomes angry because he doesn't want to hear what he knows inherently is good for him. Right? So even if a devotee from time to time might disturb people, and we're recommended not to, our instruction of these principles is sometimes unspoken. Right? Unspoken. Better to be unspoken. And that means teaching by example, right? Yad yad acharati shrestas. The common people will follow the behavior of somebody who's following religious principles. So, you know, people will get disturbed if you tell them. So if we can't tell them, then just set the right example. That's good too. That's powerful. That's very powerful. And everybody appreciate Mahajana Jaina Gata Sapanta. You know, the path of religiosity is displayed by the Mahajans, by the devotees. And that's honored and recognized. So Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee is loved by everybody because they're working for the benefit of everybody. And that's what the leaders of society are lacking, that example of shelter, of protection, of providing security for others. They say, we'll look after you, you know, we'll protect you, but then they don't fulfill their promise, and that's a betrayal. And that sense of betrayal upsets and disturbs everyone, everything. And you know, there's no greater betrayal than that, than the slaughtering of animals, as Prabhupada points out here. And so And that's why we find within human society, we find struggle, wars, why we get reactions because of the misbehavior or the lack of awareness of Dharma, religious principles, and what's beneficial for us all. And people engage in activities that are the opposite, then we find upadruttaha, disturbance in society. Whereas, when people come into the association of the devotees and they discover peacefulness, I mentioned this the other day too, but that's why example is so important. That people come to the temple and they associate with the devotees and they say, "Whoa, this is very peaceful." Right? So it's demonstrable and appreciable. People can appreciate it. Where there's trust and protection, there's security. This is what people are looking for, right? People want security. There have been songs written about it, right? I want security. Because with that comes peace. You know, people want peace. So, does anyone have any comments or questions? It's all pretty straightforward. There's a common theme running through this particular set of Sibya. Sibya is a very merciful devotee. She's a book distributor.
Hi Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. My question is that you were talking about animal killing.
Yeah.
So when I say to my friends that you're killing and eating someone, they say that we're not killing anyone, we're just buying it from the supermarket and eating it. So what should I tell him?
You should tell them that they should read the Bhagavad Gita. But that might be a bit much. So there is a purport in second chapter, I think it is, one of the verses, can't remember the number. 15 maybe, something around there, where Prabhupada explains that sometimes there's a murder, right? And in a murder case, there are half a dozen people convicted, right? Go to court. And some of them may not actually have committed the murder. They didn't do it, but they are what's called an accessory after the fact. Right? They helped to dispose of the body, or they provided a false alibi for somebody. Right? So they get punished too, because they facilitated or they participated in the crime. So the owner of the animal, the person who slaughters the animal, the person who transports it, the person who sells it, the person who prepares it, and the person who consumes, right? I think that's about it. I've got pretty much everybody covered. Right? They're all like accessories or parties to the act. So they all have to one degree or another complicity. Right? They're all involved. Right? And so therefore, because of their involvement, they get some, they're awarded some portion of the karma, of the reaction. Right? So you can tell them that the because there's bad karma, I don't think you can explain it any more gently than that. It's we're causing the suffering of somebody else, and because we're participating in that, even if it's remotely, we still have to suffer the consequences. What do you reckon? Is that okay? Is that too much? No? Yeah, you can tell them. In a quiet time, take your time. Huh? Explaining these things to people requires them to be a little bit submissive, a bit, they have to hear it. Right? So that's also another, you know, we see the preachers with the Bible standing in Bourke Street. Well, we used to, I don't know if they're still there these days. You know, we'd go on Hari Naam and the preachers of the Bible would stand there and they'd wave the Bible at us and tell us we're all going to hell. You're all going to hell. Yeah. And we're saying, we're all chanting Hare Krishna, we're happy to go to hell. We'll chant Hare Krishna in hell. Yeah, and we don't listen to them. Who listens to them? Nobody. So, you know, there's time, place and circumstance. Bhagavad Gita explains a lot of these things, especially 17th chapter, the divisions of faith. You know, there's austerities of the body, austerity of speech, and the austerity of thought. Right. So the austerity of speech is to speak words that are pleasing to others. But sometimes we have to speak the truth. Sometimes we have to, all of the time it's recommended that a devotee, anybody, should speak the truth. But, you know, that doesn't mean we're rude to people. Speak the truth. That also means speaking words that are not agitating or disturbing. So you have to wait for the opportune moment to explain some of these principles to others. And some circumstances or some situations are not conducive to that delivery of information. So we have to choose the opportunities carefully and make sure that the hearer is going to be receptive. Otherwise, a waste of time. And so in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned how charity should be given at the right time, in the right place, to the right person. Right? Same with giving knowledge or information. It should be given at the appropriate time so that its delivery is effective, so that the delivery is effective. Right? So, yeah. Is that okay, Sibya? Good luck. Vishnu Priya.
Haribol, in regards to that, I used to tell my children to tell their friends, well, if they had a pet, just because you know the pet, you wouldn't eat the pet. So just because you don't know the animal, we don't, you know, you would respect the animal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's... I think I got my point across.
Yes. Yeah. Prabhu. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Last few sessions, I mean, the focus is more around the leadership or the quality of the leader. And this is a conversation going between Vishnudutas and Yamadutas. Mm. So what is the link? Why are they focusing on the leadership and the leadership qualities? What is the context? That's the question.
Well, the Yamadutas have witnessed Ajamil and his sinful life. And so the expectation is that he should be suffering, he should be punished, right? But the Vishnudutas are challenging the Yamadutas. They're saying, no, he's purified from those reactions by the chanting of the holy name. And so the Yamadutas haven't experienced this situation before. So there's a debate as to what should happen to Ajamil. Well, he should be punished ordinarily according to the previous activities that he's performed. He should suffer. And of course this is all because in the previous canto we were looking at the destinations of those who perform sinful activities. And now we're getting a juxtaposition, a contrast, or comparison and a contrast of the behavior of a sinful man, Ajamil, and then the fact that he was a brahmana in his previous, in his youth, who was inadvertently influenced by bad association and became lax in his brahminical practice and became habituated to sinful activities, and so therefore he should be suffering. But he's not suffering. So the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas are having a debate as to what's going on here. Why aren't we following religious principles? But what is being illustrated is that, you know, sometimes we get devotees who are vegetarian and they've been vegetarian from birth, right? And then they see the white devotees, the white people, they say, oh no, this person's not, they weren't a vegetarian from birth like me. No? I had to deal with an issue this week. They're fallen, right? They're fallen. Well, yes, they were fallen, but now they're chanting Hare Krishna, right? Now they're chanting Hare Krishna, so they're not fallen, and we shouldn't look at them because of their fallen. So the Yamadutas are looking at Ajamil, fallen, he was fallen. But turn that down, please. Raj, thanks. But no, he's chanting Hare Krishna. Ah, a Vaishnava. Right? This is very important for the Krishna consciousness movement, actually. If we have this sense of superiority, oh, I've been a vegetarian all my life and you haven't, you're a fallen rascal, that can be problematic. Right? Because, and Prabhupada of quotes, I can't remember the verse, Prabha Vishnave Namaha, the power of Lord Vishnu and his holy name, and the power to purify and to to reinstate a person who might have been in a fallen condition, but because of his chanting of Hare Krishna, chanting the holy name, he's now elevated to the platform of a Vaishnava, should never be disrespected, right? So this is being illustrated especially here in this pastime, because Ajamil ordinarily by dint of his behaviour should have been punished. But because he was chanting, right? And some people, you know, especially in Vedic culture, there's attachment to ritual or to learning, right? And the chanting of Hare Krishna is so simple. It's too simple. Well, all you have to do is chant. What about, you know, I've been reciting the Vedas all of my life, or I've been a vegetarian all of my life, or whatever it is that's been done, right? And so therefore the chanting of Hare Krishna, it's potent, it's so simple, yet people think, oh, that can't be right. But it is right. And so that's why this story is being taught in the Bhagavatam, is to illustrate the potency, the power of Lord Vishnu and his name, and its capability to elevate even the most sinful to the platform of a Vaishnava, right? So that's what's really being taught here. And you can see that in Srila Prabhupada's life and his teachings and his life and his dedication to just distributing the holy name, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. That's Mahaprabhu's, yeah, mission. Give the holy name to everybody because it can uplift the most fallen. What is it? Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Karo Mori Patita Pavana, whatever. Yeah, Tava Avatar. Your avatar is to deliver the most fallen. Yes, thank you. We don't sing that song very often here, but yes. 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 And the translation? There is nobody as merciful as you. Yeah, that's right, and we see it. Lord Chaitanya's Mahavadanyaya, the most magnanimous, right? And how is he the most magnanimous? He's giving the holy name to everybody. That's why we go out and chant. We're giving people the Maha Mantra. What's that?
He's giving love of God to everyone.
Yes, that's right. And people know it. Like I was saying the other day, you know, you go on Harinam and people just start smiling. Right? They know. They feel it. They feel the benefit. They start smiling. They become happy. Everybody becomes happy. So does that make sense? Yeah. That's what's happening. So we have to remind the devotees sometimes who've been vegetarian all their lives and poo-poo the white devotees, you know. Well, you have to remember this temple was built by white devotees. Wouldn't be here. We pure vegetarians wouldn't be able to enjoy the benefit of worshipping Radha Balabhar if it wasn't for those impure white devotees.
Last year there was one protest took place, and there was in front of the railway track, all the animal rights movement people, they were protesting against the killing of this animal.
So, killing of animal. Yes.
So, your devotees also, we should also join in this movement, isn't it?
Maybe, maybe not. We already have our own movement, and we want them to join us, because then automatically people will become non-violent. But because they're non-violent, that doesn't mean we should join them because they may not be devotees. Right? Yeah, we've got to be careful about. We may go to demonstrations to, you know, take advantage of a big crowd, but that doesn't mean that we're there to protest. And in fact, actually, you know, we should be a little discriminating. There are some protests we probably don't want to be associated with. And so better not to go. Go somewhere else. You know, we don't want to be seen to be this or that or the other thing. We're the Hare Krishnas. We do our thing. Right? And what is it? Sangha Sanjayate Kama. You know, the people that you associate with, you become like them also. So we have to be a little bit discriminating.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you very much for the class.
You're welcome.
I would like to know about the three modes of nature. It's Rajas, Tamas and Sattvic.
Yes.
As Bhagavad Gita says that human beings are all the time under these three modes of nature.
Four, actually, in one sense, because there's Sudashattva, there's pure goodness also. So yes, that's right.
Yeah, so when one identifies that one has this or that mode of nature, how one can alleviate from one nature to the other? And is it possible to have pure goodness in this age of darkness?
Yes, yeah, good question. The 16th chapter? What's the modes? 14th chapter. 14th is the modes of mature nature. So you can read that because it describes the qualities of each. You can also find it repeated again even in the 18th chapter, 17th chapter. There are descriptions of how the modes of material nature influence different circumstances and different individuals, right? And how the modes of material nature manifest, because it's not just pure sattva, pure rajas, pure tamas. It's a mixture very often.
Yeah. Right?
So what you'll discover is, in yourself, you'll discover odd things. But you'll discover somewhere there's some goodness, but then somewhere there's some passion and somewhere there's some ignorance. It's rare to find somebody who's purely tamasic or purely rajasic or purely, although maybe not so difficult to find purely tamasic in this day and age. There are some people that pretty fit in that category. But Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, 17th chapter, 18th, in the beginning, 18th chapter, you'll find. Now, how to elevate? Well, pretty much that's the whole message of the Bhagavad Gita, is, you know, by the performance of bhakti and the rules of sadhana, you know, our practice, effectively, right? One can gradually elevate from the lower modes to a mode of goodness and above. Right? So it means eating properly, sleeping. Yukdahari viharasya, even 6th chapter, which I'm teaching at the moment. Yukdahari viharasya, yukta kama sachetasu, yukta svapnavavodasya, yoga ubhavati dukkaha. So principles of yoga, right? Regulated eating and sleeping, regulated work and recreation, one can gradually elevate. It's by managing your habits, I suppose. Developing good habits, you can gradually be elevated to more to goodness.
But the Maya is like so powerful, as you mentioned, that the steps you just mentioned, that these are the ways one can elevate. But for that, in order to have that regularity, discipline, somebody, because in ancient times, people used to go to Gurukul to get proper knowledge, qualifications, how to be at the best possible state. But nowadays, nobody teaches.
No, but that's not true. If you're coming here, you're hearing the Bhagavatam, you're learning. This is what this institution is created for. The Hare Krishna temples, the ISKCON, is an institution that's purpose is to teach these principles. So there is a place. It's called the Hare Krishna temple. Right? And that's why we're here. We're here to learn how to elevate from tamas, rajas, to sattva, to sudasattva. So there is a place. And we're in it right now.
Also, I read the Bhagavad Gita. It says even the sattvic guna also creates bondage.
Yes. But that's what. So that's why we're looking at sudasattva.
Shuddhisattva.
Yes, and or devotional activities, because even in devotional activities, rajas may be engaged, right? So we see that Arjuna is fighting on the battlefield, right? But because it's service to Krishna, it's not actually rajas. It's service, right? So each one of us has a mixture of modes, right? But we can take that mixture, and by engaging it in devotional service for Krishna's, or for the spiritual master's pleasure, or for the pleasure of the devotees, or for the service of the deity, for preaching, whatever, we can take whatever qualities a man or a woman has, and they can be then engaged in devotional service, and by that service, even though externally we might say, oh, rajasic or tamasic or sattvic or whatever, actually it's not. And so this requires quite a bit of transcendental vision, because to see the pot washer as a transcendentalist requires a pure vision of the action in connection with Krishna and its spiritual potency. Right, rather than the material activity, right? Or we see the activities of the devotees. They're doing business. They're making money. They're haggling and bargaining. You know, so we might say, "Oh, this is a bit raja tama," right? But it's not, because what does that devotee do? He gets his money. And he uses it to maintain his family. They're all devotees, so they're all doing devotional service. And he's also supporting the preaching. Right? So those activities might appear to be like everybody else. Right? But what's important is intent, right? The reason why they do it, and the context. You know, the environment in which they're performing those activities, so that you see that actually, even though he looks like just a mundane man, he's not, because everything that he does is meant for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. Right? So it's different. It's actually not a material activity, even though it appears to be under the modes of material nature. It appears like that. Right? So the vision of a devotee is such that he sees the individual, but then he's able to take whatever skills or talents that person has and use it in a way that is conducive or developmental of that person's spiritual practice and spiritual identity. So it's why a devotee, you know, Prabhupada gave the example of, you know, Prabhupada was told about this yogi who, whenever he was given money, he would reject it. His hand would turn away. So Prabhupada said, you can take a picture of me, and whenever somebody's giving me money, I'll be keeping it. Now why? Does that mean that Prabhupada was just interested in money? No. But he knew that money could be used in Krishna's service. Right? So let's take the money. Let's take the skills. Let's take the talents of everybody appropriately. You know, there are some things that people are good at doing. We just have to reject it because it's not conducive to spiritual life. But we look at the talents that a person has and we say, okay, what do you do? All right, do that for Krishna. And of course, in the process, we encourage them, get up early in the morning, do your puja, chant Hare Krishna, worship Krishna and, you know, the previous acharyas. There's a whole lot more that comes with it, right? Chant Hare Krishna, effectively, that's what we say there. What's our solution for everyone? What's our solution for everyone, Mahatmaji?
Hare Krishna mantra.
Chant Hare Krishna. If you've got a problem, chant Hare Krishna. This is the... We have one-size-fits-all problem-solving. But of course it's the details that count. Because each one of us, you, all of us, we all have a different personality. We all have different skills and talents and different propensities to act. So we discard the things that are really useless. But we encourage an individual in the things that they're good at, do that and do it in such a way, you know, because most of us can't, not most, I'd say all of us here, can't sit down and just chant Hare Krishna all day long. Right? We got ants in our pants. Right? We've got to get up and do something. And Prabhupada recognized that. And so therefore created so many engagements for us that are spiritually beneficial, but engage those skills and talents that each person has. So, you know, this bringing everybody to the mode of goodness, that may not be possible, but that's not necessary. It's take the talents that a person's got, use them. But at the same time also, rise early. This is goodness. Right? Rise early is goodness. Worship the spiritual master. That's goodness. Chant Hare Krishna. That's goodness. Study hear the Shastra, like we're doing now. This is the mode of goodness. Right? So there's a lot of what we do is sattvic. But at the same time, we take whatever there is and use that, and then it's converted from material energy to spiritual energy, because it's connected to Krishna. That's the idea. So, you know, it's not that all of us, well, we won't, you know, we'll be fully elevated to the platform of a brahmana. But because whatever we do it for Krishna, then it becomes purified. In any case. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Prabhuji. Okay. Can I ask one more question, please?
He's pretty intense, this guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's okay, though.
Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
As it says in Bhagavad Gita that when Shri Krishna was having a conversation with Arjuna at the battlefield, that one should act according to its mode of nature. For example,
right.
Arjuna was a Kshatriya,
yeah,
and he felt like at one moment he felt like I should just leave because I don't want to kill my relatives.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, what's the message for all of us? Like, let's say we all have different qualities of nature, and if one tries to change that quality. Let's say if somebody has like Ratsik or like, for example, anything. If somebody is changing that, is it, would
Where's
it be...
Where's your masks, gentlemen?
Would it be opposite to their nature? And how is, how one can feel like it's helping them to elevate?
Well, generally speaking, we need a guide, right? So it's so that we can ascertain what is the appropriate utilization of a person's character, and you know what elements of a person's character have to be modified or to be adjusted or even rejected, right? So you know, meat eating, gambling, taking intoxication, illicit sex, these things we avoid, right? We reject those things. But what skills and talents of an individual need to be encouraged or engaged, that requires a little bit of analysis and a depth of perception in the nature of the individual, right? It's unique for everybody, right? So that's why we associate with the devotees and we seek out senior association of those who can help us work out what we should be doing, you know, what I should do. So in part we need to work it out ourselves as well. It's not that we should always rely on somebody else to tell us what to do, you know. But we get the basic gist of the direction we should be going in, and then we pursue those activities that are conducive to cultivating our spiritual life. And we do that with the advice of those who are in a position to give us good guidance. Well, siksha. Yeah. So find someone who you're secure and comfortable with who can give you good advice as to how you should practice your spiritual life. That's what's recommended. So you can work it out yourself. Ultimately, you've got to nut it out yourself. But of course, we do. It's like, you know, have you heard of a gentleman called Paul Keating? You probably haven't. Unless you've lived in Australia for quite some time, you might not have heard of Paul Keating. Paul Keating was the Prime Minister of Australia after Bob Hawke, who was also a famous Australian politician. But Paul Keating was striking. Paul Keating didn't have a university, didn't have a tertiary education, right? He didn't. But what did he do? Why was he so smart? Or how did he become so smart? And why was he so, what's the word? He was a really good treasurer, and he was a good prime minister too. So what did he do? What Paul Keating did was he identified people who were experts in their field and in the field that he wanted to pursue, and then he went and associated with those people and asked questions, picked their brains. Right? Very interesting character. He grew up in a family of politicians. That also helped. He had the Sangha, you know, he had the Sangha, right? But it's interesting. What did he do? He went to other senior politicians, didn't matter what side of politics, and then he would talk to them. He made friends with them and he would ask questions and then take their advice. Right? So this is what we do in spiritual life. We seek out the association of those who are more advanced and we take their advice, and follow it. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, tadviti pranipatena, pariprasnena, right? Question. With pranipat, with respect. And then once you've got the orders, then what? Sevaya. Do it. Act on it. You know, you're going to be a pretty boring disciple if your guru tells you to do something and you just ignore it. After a while, the guru's just going to say, oh, this guy's a waste of time. Well, he might not say that, but probably think it. You have to be patient instructing people sometimes because you give them good advice. And, well, there's a couple of reactions. They get angry or they just ignore you. I know sometimes, I've told this story before many times, devotees come up to my office and they say, oh, Prabhuji, how can I serve you? And then I say, well, what are you good at? And they say, this, that, and the other thing. And I say, well, how about do this? And that's the last I see of them. Maybe I'm not qualified to instruct them. That may be also part of the problem. All right, I think we should finish here.
Thank
Is
you,
that
Prabhu.
Okay, Vineet?
Thank you, Prabhu.
You're welcome. Hare Krishna. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.